Or they may not. I don't know. I've heard from a few others that said they can't make it. So maybe a smaller group today, which is great for all of you. So Mitch Sikora is a longtime client of mine, and he's going to be joining the group, and so we're glad to have him. He does private equity capital fundraising for real estate investments primarily. Susan is the CEO of a nonprofit that does equine therapy. And Brandy is in education in California and is managing everything from like a lot of like facilities management and building and things like that. Oh, I'm back.
Nice to meet y'all. Yeah.
So with that, who would like to start? I did get an email from you, Susan, so I'm happy to start with you since you had a specific issue that you wanted to talk about. Do you want to start, kick us off?
Sure. Absolutely. Nonprofits are unique animals, and when a nonprofit moves from the founder being the one and only plate spinner, and you add more people to that mix, it gets complicated, emotional, and often difficult. We have developed, we're a 40-year-old organization, and I've been with the organization 12 years. Just to give you some perspective, we're not giant. We have more problems than huge organizations. When I joined, our budget was 200,000, and it's 1.5 million now. So we've grown over that period of time. I've been talking to Shane about my role and how to work through expanding the management and how we organize things and how to communicate with the board on how to do that without them actually stepping onto the property and seeing what goes on. So it makes it difficult. We'd like to add another position, going through the process of adding that position. I've been watching, I'm not sure which module it is, but about the RACI charts and the roles and responsibilities, because I think that becomes really important as you look to add somebody into the mix
That's
so that,
essential. Yeah, I'm
yeah,
glad you're
so
watching
that
that.
they know
That's
what's
module
going
four.
on. And
That's module
they're
four.
kind of looking to start from a job description, which basically they've pulled off the internet. So how do
Okay,
I apply?
let me jump in here because I read your email and I want to make sure we get enough time for you and everybody. So, a couple of things I'm going to say. One, you should absolutely be the one leading the charge on writing that job description and defining the process for the board. Here's the deal with volunteer boards. They don't often understand that they don't know what they're doing. That's the bottom line. And they're also, this is not their day job. This is an afterthought for all of them. And so they kind of muddle their way through figuring out what they need to do and what they don't. Now, if a board doesn't trust you, they will begin to try to take on things that are really your responsibility. And you might have to have difficult conversations around that. And we can navigate that if that's the case. But I don't get the sense the board doesn't trust you. So I think what's happening here is just an accident. So I think what the best thing you can do is just assume authority without asking permission and start doing things for them and say, you know, it's 80-20. Hey, board, I wanted to let you know I spent the weekend going over this. I've built a process that I'm going to recommend along with a job description that I think is architected in just the right way that's got the right responsibilities. Once you have that built, then you go to them and say, I need you guys to help me refine this to final 20%. I just need you to weigh in. I need your approval. But you don't need to be kind of gently asking permission. This is the other thing about the nonprofit land. Sometimes people just get super gentle and very affectionate. You know, I mean, not literally, but like they kind of just like, well, I don't want to do that, and that's okay. And so, I in nonprofit land, I'm always trying to inject like a little bit of just cold hard business, Whereas in business land, I'm often trying to inject humanity. And so
that's great. So, that's exactly what I needed to hear.
Good. So just own your power. You're the smartest one in the system. You've got the most experience. These are basically interns, and you have to treat them like your boss, but they have as much knowledge as interns.
Yeah.
And so you shouldn't be just being like, well, I hope the interns figure it out, because they won't know how to do it.
Yeah. And part of that is that, you know, on the board, I have the veterinarian who provides all the care, and the woman from Goldman Sachs who is managing, you know, big company issues and doesn't really get it either. Great advice. Yes.
And even if they had the expertise, what they don't have is the time.
Yeah.
You live this. No volunteer board who's on a nonprofit or a church thinks about this more than 10 minutes a day, at most, if you're lucky. And so they kind of show up to a board meeting. They haven't really prepped. They're like, oh, I got to do my volunteer work this week. Well, let me give my best thinking, and then I'm going to go back to my life. And you're left kind of going, okay, hold on, let me guide you. So for sure, proactive guidance of your board is going to be a huge win for you. And I mean that across the board for you. Like every time you're interacting with the board, you are leading them. You're the guide. You're the one they reference. Right. So assume that authority and power, and you'll be in much better shape.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, you bet. No problem. Okay, good. Who else is up? Who else has something they want to talk about? You're all listeners today. You guys just want me to talk. I'm happy to just, talk.
This is my first one. What's the format? What's the typical format of this group?
Format is you guys bring whatever questions you have. If there's anything you're struggling with, anything you want to talk about, could be personal, could be professional. It doesn't really matter. This is just your time to get kind of tailored feedback on whatever it is that you might be going through in your business and life. And we talk through that. So. And some people are, watching active modules. Some people are dealing with kind of specific real-time problems, a hard conversation they need to have, a question about long-term strategy, really anything you want. So really the agenda is your all's agenda, and I'm here to be available when I can. And if there is no interest or questions, that's fine. I'll just lecture. I'll find something to talk about. Brandy, you were going to flag something. Did you have something?
I was going to say, I'll talk if nobody else wants. I love to talk. So for all of you who don't know me, hi, I'm Brandy. I build and modernize schools in Eastside San Jose, California, Silicon Valley. Anyway, I work for a school district, and I have a board just like Susan, and I have to deal with those politics. And again, they come in. I just wanted to relate to Susan, the board doesn't always get it. And my board is here for education. And they're like, they have no clue about building or modernizing or what's stick frame versus all that other stuff. So that's my specialty. But anyway, my problem that brought me to Shane was some communication issues that I had with a department that I work collaboratively with. We have the same boss basically. And I made the mistake of when they asked my opinion, I gave it when I started. And so that started sort of a war.
Kiss of death. Don't ever give an opinion.
So Michelle may have been on the call last time. I'm not sure. But basically they started a smear campaign. It was just real high school stuff. All the allegations have been determined to be unfounded, but I'm sort of recoiling from all that.
I feel your pain.
Thank you.
Shane knows I feel your pain.
Okay. So I've just, for me, I couldn't be more amenable to suggestions, honestly. And then these people want to talk to me, and I could care less, but I have adopted this policy with my department. We're just going to kill them with kindness. they send like goading emails to try to get us to put things in writing and stuff. And I'm just like, kill them with kindness. Be like, hey, that's a great question. You know, we're really short staffed. Oh, by the way, we're also short staffed. When I started, I had 6 people reporting to me. Yesterday, I have 2. So COVID, lack of, we call them substitutes in the district, anybody who wants to be an hourly employee. So we've been treading water for about a year, but now we're just starting to drown. And I've got this great manager who reports to me. She's been taking on quite a workload. I'm trying to stay up here and not be in the weeds, but I got to keep dipping my toe into the weeds to help pull all this workload over. But anyway, with all that background, the gal that like spearheaded the smear campaign and all this, kind of had a win with her yesterday. So I just wanted to share that. I don't know.
I was going to ask you about that. We had talked about a strategy to re-engage her. I don't know if you've followed that.
Well, I talked to HR because I wanted to make sure that they were on board with it. And, they said that would be a great idea. They wanted me to wait till after the holidays, just because everybody's kind of raw from having received their letters saying, no, your letter does not amount to what you're claiming. I don't know if you can see all these post-it notes behind me. This is like this workflow.
It's very impressive.
Thank you. So her name is Sandy. So she comes over with our boss yesterday because she's basically reacting to an email that I sent her that was like, I can't approve this. Can you please itemize what you're trying to get us to do? And she's refusing to itemize it. And I was like, and so we've had back and forth communication. And I don't know, Shane, if you said it verbally, if I heard it in one of your modules, but something about them being in denial. And I'm just going to have to keep repeating myself over and over again until I get their buy-in kind of thing. Yep. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep repeating it ad nauseum until she gets it. But so she comes over yesterday with a plan where she's going to change some workflows so that she doesn't have to do what I'm asking her to do. And so I entertained the meeting and then I quickly turned it and I was like, well, actually this is a really good opportunity for us to implement this plan. And this one's actually a linear workflow versus this horrible workflow where we're constantly in this square dance where it's one step forward and 2 steps back. If we keep it linear, then we're not going to have this extra work for everybody involved. And because she brought our boss over, he was like, oh, I don't see a problem with this. Do you see a problem with it, Sandy? And she, you could tell she was just sitting there like, I'm gonna find something wrong with this. But she couldn't.
Good. That's great.
So
it sounds like you did a good job of not throwing anyone under the bus and not kind of making dismissive comments. And
correct.
You
know, again,
good. Awesome. I think that's the hardest thing for you in your context that you're doing great at is when you come from business world to government land, you know, you've got to make the tribe happy at all times. Everyone has to be really feeling good because no one ever gets fired. So this is your family for life as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
So you're doing really well. I know it makes you want to pull your hair out given your personality, but it's exactly what you need to do. And it's going to help you repair that.
So, she wants to have a joint meeting with, and they're not even stakeholders for the process. She just wants everybody that's under our mutual supervisor to be there to put in their input. And I was like, sure, that sounds like a great idea. And the whole time I'm like, that's just ridiculous.
But I love that you said that. That's awesome. That is exactly what you say, even though it's a terrible idea.
It is a horrible idea. Everybody, because the door was open and everyone in the, I told you I work in a trailer. It's just paper thin walls. So they could hear the entire conversation. And when Sandy and our boss left, they were like, that is the dumbest idea. Why did you agree to that? And I was like, kill them with kindness. All I can do is.
I think you're doing the exact right thing. Do you have an opportunity to repair anything with her? Or is that like the only interactions you're going to be able to get with her?
I think between now and the new year, it's going to be really difficult. We are public sector. So we have so many vacation days, holidays, excuse me, coming up. I think we have 3 weeks.
I'm not referring so much to the logistics of that. I'm more concerned about the HR politic dynamic. You had mentioned because what I want to be able to do is I want to set the stage for you to have a conversation with her where you get to say, hey, I'd love a chance to reset. I clearly got off on the wrong foot. The way that I approached this, I think, was the wrong way to approach our relationship. My objective, my interest is for both of us to have a really good experience together, working together. And I'd like to work on that with you. And the way I want to start that is just by owning anything I need to own. And it doesn't matter if any of the stuff I just said feels real to you, you say it anyway.
Oh yeah, no, no problem with that.
And you give her a chance to just bitch and complain about nothing. And then you own the stuff. And you're like, oh, I'm really, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, are we... sounds good. I want to apologize, et cetera, whatever. And then you say, okay, you think we're able to start off on a new foot? Is that something we can do together? And just get her buy-in on that. And then once that conversation has happened, if she starts throwing you under the bus or doing all these things or making things difficult, you can have a follow-up and just say, hey, I kind of get the impression maybe I haven't fully owned what you need me to own because it feels like this isn't working very well for you. And I'd really like this to work well for you. And it seems like there's still quite a lot of challenges. Is there anything else that we need to clean up that I haven't really owned that you think I need? And you keep putting it back on her. Like, hey, we have this agreement. I noticed that agreement isn't being fulfilled. Is there something I did wrong that could help? But, you know, more of that you do, the person you're talking about does not have the capacity to own their stuff. They're a finger pointer only. And so all of that's going to begin to repair. So something for you to just be thinking about, whether it's in the new year or whenever,
yeah,
be thinking about that agreement you can make with her.
Absolutely. It's probably going to occur in January, unfortunately.
Okay. No problem. Yeah. No urgency. Okay, cool. Congrats on that. Well done. Who's up? Who's up next?
Shane, I got a follow-up on the review that I had with the employee from a while ago, where she was just really not aware of what was going on around. It was another 2-hour review, but we made some great ground. She actually saw some things that she didn't, or that she was doing, that another employee was doing that she was complaining about and not being open to criticism. She was asking for feedback, but as soon as she was given feedback, she would shut it down. Or so I was able to bring to the table and her be aware of that. There's still concern with how and what she's prioritizing day to day. So I didn't know if you had anything that I could pass along or utilize with her to help her prioritize what she's needing to do day to day.
You're asking how to guide this person to guide that person, is that right? Or are you trying to guide someone directly?
I'm trying to guide someone into prioritizing their day better.
Okay, got it. Okay, best way to prioritize action is to either look at the easy impact matrix or at the important urgent matrix. So an easy impact, you just plot 4 quadrants. How easy is it to do? How big of an impact does it make? And then populate it. Anything that's really easy to implement and anything that has a big impact, you should act now. That's that quadrant. Anything that's going to make a really big impact but is not easy to implement, you should plan. You should work on and figure out how you're going to execute. And anything that has low impact but is really easy to do, you can consider for later. And anything that is neither, you ignore. So you literally give her the quadrant and you ask her to plot all those things on that map. And that will automatically populate what you should do in what order. Okay. So that's one. Alternatively, you could look at what's just called the easy, or I'm sorry, you could look at what's called the important urgent matrix. And it's just how important is something? How urgent is it, right? There are lots of things you do that are not very urgent, but are super important. You're going to do those later. There are lots of things that are super urgent, but are not that important. You may not need to do those right away. So those are 2 tools you can use, and one of them will populate a really helpful priority list for you.
Okay. Good.
Other comments, questions, people who have things, issues? Michelle. Go ahead, JD.
I was going to say, if no one else had one, I had one other one, but if Michelle's got something, we can go.
Go right ahead, JD. I can hang.
Okay. Michelle wants to avoid me today. I can feel it. She's given.
Not at all. I'm just in this, I'm in this hanging mode in general. So, you know, I'm just hanging in general.
Good. Okay. So, We'll come to you next, Michelle. Okay. JD, fire away. What else you got?
The other one, which was, I'm trying to tie up the year-end reviews, and just had a review with a lower level. That's an hourly delivery driver is what it is. Pretty simple job to deliver prescriptions to patients' home, collect payment if they need to, and come back with the signatures for those. He's held other higher positions. This is like a retirement job for him. He's held higher positions, minister of a church, and been very, has a lot of initiative to get things done and going, and takes it a lot on himself. Like, we'll even buy things that the company should be buying. He'll buy it for us and not necessarily follow the chain of command and things of that nature. So, but he can be very, like, I'm doing no wrong. I'm trying to help out. I'm doing everything to help out and give. But when it comes down to dealing with him directly, he always puts it off to what everyone else is doing and what they're doing right or what they're doing wrong, or usually it's what they're doing wrong, and trying to detract focus from the conversation with, okay, you didn't do this correctly. Well, yeah, I know, but this person wasn't doing this, this, and this. And so just looking for some advice to help make that conversation go better the next time, to bring it back to him. And because as soon as I tried a couple times to bring it back and say, okay, is there anything that you can improve upon? No, I'm doing great. I'm doing everything I can, and I'm probably exceeding expectations. And so there was nothing to go forward on with that. And he wasn't open to
what do you anything want him to be doing? What do you want him to change? What's he not doing that you wish he were doing?
And that's to a point where it's such a somewhat a basic position as well, that he's meeting the expectations that we're doing. It's just, he doesn't want to go to that next level. He's gotten into a couple communication tiffs with other drivers. It's usually a male to female side of things, to where male drivers he gets along great with, male direct reports he gets along great with, but any female that's in a leadership role or even another female driver, they don't get along well. So I don't know how to go down that pathway of adjust. That would be the improvement, is you need to be able to work with the opposite sex better at work, because that's where all the conflict and confrontation is coming in.
Okay, so when it comes to working with an employee who is not performing the way you want, they don't think they're doing anything wrong, and it's hard for you to know like where to start the conversation, one of the best places to start is ask them what their goal is. What is this guy's goal? What does he want to achieve? What does he want to become? He is actually motivated a lot by purpose. I can tell by the description you gave me. So what's his purpose? What's his contribution? What does he want to be doing? So when you ask that question, find out what the answer is. Then after you have that answer, then you want to link your feedback to supporting that answer. So, you know, for example, one of the things that you could say is, if his goal is like, I'm just loving this role and I'm just super happy where I am and I never want to grow and I don't want to go up the ladder. And then you go, great. Hey, in order for you to be the best version of you in this role where you are now, there's one thing that I keep noticing. It's a pattern that I see, and I want to process it with you. The observation that I'm getting, the feedback I'm getting, is that you're really great with male drivers, and we're noticing some sort of conflict with female drivers. What do you think is going on there? And then he could say, well, if women drivers, they don't understand, blah, blah, and let him blame everybody else for a little while. And you go, yeah, that may be, I don't know, I wasn't there, I can't tell you that. What I do know is you got to get better at it. And so whether it's your fault or not, doesn't really matter. It's your responsibility to figure out how to make that work better. You got a perception problem or you got a reality problem. It doesn't matter which one it is to me. It's got to be repaired. And so the reason that's important is he's highly defended. If he was formerly a pastor, he's a super helper and he cares a lot about purpose. And he probably has just a little bit of ego. having been a former pastor, I've worked with lots of pastors, ego is pretty common. I know it sounds weird, but like there's quite a lot of ego in that. And so, you know, that being really defended is normal. Having a high level of defendedness is really normal. And so you're just trying to help them work with that. And the way you get around defensiveness is you just concede. It's like, yeah, it may or may not be your issue. Who knows? I don't know if you did anything wrong, but you got a problem that's got to get fixed. So now we're not blaming you. Now we're not trying to tell you that you're the problem and you did. You're just saying, look, man, you could have done it perfectly. You still got a perception problem. How do you want to fix that? I got some suggestions, but I think you're really smart at this stuff. How would you solve that? You know, that's another thing you do is you flatter a little bit. You give them just a little bit of pat on the back. You acknowledge, boy, you're really good at this stuff. I mean, heck, man, you were a pastor. I bet you know exactly how to do this. How would you solve that? Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's a suggestion. Does that help? Does that seem like it's useful? And if he's like, I really want to get to the next level, then you go, great, Pat, I want to get you to the next level. I think you're doing awesome. Like lots of attaboys and accolades and all that kind of stuff. And then you say, yeah, here's the one thing holding you back. And I'm not even saying you're doing it wrong. I'm just telling you, you have this perception issue that's got to get repaired. And so just link it to the goal and then don't necessarily blame them for it. Unless you have a concrete behavior and action he's done. Like what you've just told me is kind of vague. He said, she said stuff. Best way to handle that is totally like, I don't know what's true. I just know that there's static in the system. So we got to remove it.
Great.
And in a lot of ways, like what Brandy is dealing with, like Brandy was accused of being racist, you know, and she was validated and they researched it and they found out it was BS. But now she's got this kind of brand that isn't real. It's a perception problem that I'm telling her how to repair. But I'm not saying, oh, you did it all wrong. You really are a racist and you need to fix that. You know, I'm saying like, I know it's lame, but try to find a way to repair it because you got a perception problem. I think you treat this guy that way. And that could be absolutely true. I mean, he might be in the exact same spot Brandy's in where the women drivers aren't. He really hasn't done anything wrong and they got their own chip on their shoulder. Who knows? Or he might be misogynist. I don't know which. but your job isn't to verify his character flaw. Your job is to create high levels of functioning.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
And as you know, as a general rule in leading and managing people, It is tempting to go on like a witch hunt about character and intention and flaws around people. That stuff is a dead end in management. The most useful thing you can do is focus on words and behaviors. Give your feedback around what behaviors did you see? What words did they say? And don't worry about what that says about their character. Just help them manage their behavior because they can't change their character. They can only change their behavior and their words. All right. Michelle, you still in the waiting game? Have we gotten any, have you making some progress? What's going on?
I'm still in the waiting game.
Okay.
So the thing is I guess one of the most frustrating pieces is when I speak to, you know, my direct managers, which are the owners, right? And I say, okay, here's what I'm seeing, they're like, yes, we agree with you, but we don't want to make any changes now. We don't want to do anything. I'm like, when? So, and you know, to your point last week when you said, I don't think one's trying to pit, well, one could be trying to pit me against the other, whatever, but I have one that is gung-ho, let's do, and the other one that is your more nervous Nelly, you know, let's just take it slow. So I feel I'm caught between the two and trying to be very cognizant of the conversation we had last week where, you know, I was asked whether or not I felt handcuffed. So I'm just trying to pay attention to the words that are being used because I mean, I see your point in retrospect, but I do have a lot of I guess just these one-on-one conversations. And I'm just like, okay, can the two of you get on the same page and then come to me first?
I think like that's just, great. I think that's a great response. I think that's a great response. So the other thing that I think you can do now, if you're in a spot where you are feeling like your boss isn't giving clear direction, you have two bosses or whatever, and they're not giving clear direction. One of the things you do is you just have a direct conversation with them and just say, look, I'm really excited to be here. I know I've only been here a certain amount of time, but I just want you to know if you're managing me, my morale is dropping. And what will help me is to redefine what winning looks like over the next 60 to 90 days or the next 6 months. And what you do is you just get them to set up the targets for you. Because you go, look, I got two different targets. I got one target that you guys want me to hit here. I got another target telling me I don't need to hit it. Can you guys please provide me with a clear target that the both of you can agree on?
Right.
So that is another way to help force the conversation. And it's a really valid thing for you to ask for. It, you know, and a great phrase anytime you want to give somebody some feedback is to simply say, hey, if I were in your position, I'd want to know this information. And so I want to share it with you. And the information is my morale is flagging. You know, I'm starting to get really frustrated or I'm getting pretty anxious. And here's what would help me. And then you ask, you make this the specific request for whatever it is you need.
Right.
Okay. So that's just a little conversation bracket that you can kind of install with both of them. You might request a meeting with both of them. And then you might give them a timeline. You might say, look, can we agree that in the next 2 weeks, you guys will get back to me with an answer? That'll give you guys some time to talk and discuss. But it would just help me so much if you could point me in a direction and I would know what winning looks and feels like. Right. That way you're not wringing your, you know, pulling your hair out, go, why am I not moving? Why are we not moving?
Yeah. I mean, basically, that's pretty much, basically where I am. I mean, I had a conversation the other day. Basically, I said, look, until you all are willing to make changes and move, this is where I'm going to focus and this is what I'm going to do. And I can't do anything else. It is what it is. And I did preface the conversation because I had some very rude emails that was received. And I basically poured it to the owners. I was like, look, this is not going to be tolerated. Number one, I mean, I'm not going to tolerate being just pure disrespect. But so, and I like left it alone and they called to check on me. And I was like, look, I don't think right now is a good time to be talking to me. I'm very emotionally driven right now and very pissed off, but we wanted to keep talking. So I was like, which part of that don't you understand? I'm not in my logical mind. I'm in my emotional state because it was just totally disrespectful. And I had to like work through.
Wait, this is that. A disrespectful email that came from someone from below you or across from you or from the boss or where who sent
well, this? It was a coworker, a lateral individual.
And then who wanted to keep talking to you, that coworker or your boss?
No, my boss.
And so your boss is like, hey, let's talk about this. And you're super angry and you're saying, I need a boundary.
Yeah.
And he wasn't respecting it. He's like, no, let's keep talking.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so just as a general rule in all human relationships, when it comes to boundaries are your responsibility to set up and enforce. Mm-hmm. It is not anybody else's responsibility to honor the boundary you set up. So when you set a boundary and someone keeps breaching it, you are responsible for enforcing it. And if that literally means I'm going to call you back in 2 hours, click, hang up,
okay,
make it clear. You're not allowed to do this, or I'm going to walk out of the room if you keep talking to me that way. Then make sure you walk out of the room. The main thing is this: do not set a boundary unless you're able to enforce it. Otherwise, it trains them to violate the boundary.
Agreed.
Makes sense?
Makes total sense. So
even if it's your boss, you can say, I just said this to you. I'm now going to hang up the phone because I'm not able to have the conversation. Click. That'll wake him up.
Yeah.
He might be angry for a little while and that's fine. And the next time he comes at you and he's pissed off at you, you go, I made really clear what my boundary was in that moment. It was going to be an unsuccessful conversation. You were unable to respect my request. That will continue if it happens again.
Okay.
Put your boss on notice. It's okay to do that. You know, okay. A boss is not allowed to talk to you any way they want just because they're your boss.
Exactly. And neither is anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's exactly right. I mean, you have plenty of self-respect. That's what I love about you. But it's okay to do that up the chain, too. I mean, it's easier when it's lateral or when it's, you know, no one has power over you. But I think it's essential to do. If bosses are mistreating or in any way abusive, they need to be put on notice.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's so anyways. The only other thing I want to say is Susan has my life motto sitting behind you on a thing. Dogs welcome, people are tolerated. I love it. Thank you so much.
I didn't see that until now.
I have my other one is true heroes in life rarely wear capes.
Ah, very good. I like it.
Yep.
Awesome.
So, not to sidetrack, but that was just perfect. Thank you so much for having that. That like brightened my day.
It's about how you feel today. I get that.
Well, and I'm in New York and I'm missing my puppy. So I'm the crazy dog lady and I rescue puppies. So I have 7 rescues at home and I'm missing every single one of them. So it was just perfect. Anyways. Oh,
wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm going to jump over to Mitch. Mitch, how you doing? What's going on? What's happening?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. So this is all new for me, right? So I wasn't really prepped or anything to come into this call. And so I'm just kind of listening, but the thing that's most on my mind now, Shane, as you know, right, I built this company working on kind of a medium-term transition into, you know, handing it off to the people, the senior people that work for me. And I'm just, struggling is too strong of a word, but I'm dealing with struggling, I guess is probably the right word. Of grooming them to make sure that they're ready to go. Right. And so again, it's not a tomorrow thing. It's not a 6-month thing. It's a 3, 4, 5, 6 year thing. And so, but I'm really enrolled in making them as strong as they can be when I do start pulling back from the company and doing other things. And, with each one, there's different challenges. And with one in particular, he's actually my most senior employee. He's a good guy. He's very smart. He's diligent, thoughtful, and all of those things, but not just doesn't seem to be that strong. He's a little non-confrontational, which sometimes you need. So, and this has been going on for a number of years and I've had chats with him. I'm like, we gotta not be on our heels. We've gotta be proactive. Our clients need to get comfort from you. And the way that you give them that comfort is that you show them through your actions that you actually know what you're talking about. You're good at what you do. And, just recently we have in all clients, nothing's perfect. It's the way of the world for all of us sitting on this call. And I have this one client that's a little bit dysfunctional. No, Shane, it's one that you don't know. And, it's just such a stupid thing, but so descriptive of part of what's going on. And he's trying to get dates from this client to set up meetings with a potential investor, right? And this client wants to raise money in the worst way, which is what we get paid to do. And we're like, listen, so-and-so wants to meet with you. I need 3 or 4 dates and times that work for you. And I'll get it to him and we'll set that up, right? And you'll meet in Florida. And then we go through this 5 days of, well, maybe you just give us dates or maybe, well, maybe this, maybe that, maybe whatever. And my staff is coming to me complaining, like, what is wrong with them? Like, it's 5 days now. It should have been 2 hours. And this is going to be counterproductive to their end goals. And I finally was like, listen, if you feel as strongly as you seem to, I'll take charge of this. Right. And I went and I went to the entire team and I said, listen, it's been 5 days. I should have taken one. I know conversations have gone on. I need dates and times and I need them now. Right. And then, then the mid-level person called my employee and, kind of did the same hemming and hawing. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? And this employee of mine was like, okay. And then the next morning I'm like, I don't have dates. What's going on? And he goes, well, this woman called me and it's the same thing and she wants me to do this. And I wrote back to everyone and I said, I need dates now. And then the woman writes me an email going, hey, you know, Frank and I spoke at 7 o'clock last night. We're both on the same page, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, with all due respect, I'm well aware of that conversation, right? I'm not so sure you're on the same page the way that you think you are. And not to make a big thing of this, but I just need the dates. Please handle this for me. Then her boss calls me and said they've spoken. And I was like, Donald, this is what, and I had a chat with him about this. Like, let's get this going the right way. I'm like, listen, guys, this is exactly what I was talking to you about. I'm well aware of the conversation last night, as well as the 10 before it. I need the day. And so finally we get it. And I realize this is a long story and I'm getting to the end. Dates get sent, all good. And then I speak to my employee who got a call from the woman who was creating all this chaos. Not that I'm a misogynist. She just happens to be a woman. And she goes, Frank, I thought we were on the same page. And instead of him going, yeah, we really needed the dates, I don't know, he was like, yeah, you know, Mitch just really thought we had, you know, we kind of were, but Mitch needed. And I was like, that's not a leader to me, right? That more than anything that's happened with him in the last 5 to 10 years, I was like, Frank, I find that concerning. Not because I need you to stick up for me, but because you didn't stick up for yourself or our company, right? And if you're going to leave this company, you know, we have, and I'm not like threatening his job. I'm just like, these are things we have to work on, right? So. Okay.
So a couple of things I'll say for you, Mitch, just again, I think instead of punching in on that one issue, I think for you, it's time to get a lot more strategic. So your job, if you want to prep the company to hand it over to people in the next 5 years, and then you want it to be successful and you want to continue benefiting from it, which means you need to become kind of a chairman,
right,
so that you still have authority and power, even though they're going to be running most of it. there are a lot of things that you'll have to start doing. One of them is starting to design a vision and values. So when you're trying to create a company that is not based on your personality, you've got to create systems and processes that are impersonal. And one of the best ways to do that when you're trying to transition a company to another leader is to build vision and values that are independent of you personally. And that is one of the first steps. So once you've, and that's all in module one, is how to begin to design your why, your higher purpose, the values, all those kinds of things. That's step one.
Yep.
And that should be done collaboratively. Like, you shouldn't just sit in a room isolated and come up with a big idea. There is a process I've designed that I actually lay out in module one that you would run them through. And you guys would develop this together. And then in order for those rituals, vision, values, all those things to live in the organization, you need to create concrete rituals, which, for example, the module four, how to have better meetings, introduces some of those rituals along with module one. Module one will give you a bunch of rituals too, but start introducing ritual cadences into your organization, which will effectively depersonalize the organization for you. And that is what makes your organization valuable, right? Is when you are no longer the one that it depends on, now you have a really valuable organization. So those are just kind of like what I'll call energetic philosophical architecture kinds of things that need to happen. That's at the highest level. And I think it's a real game changer when people learn how to do that. The next level down is you get to start defining leadership competencies. So, hey, based on this is our vision, based on this is our mission, based on these are our values and what we expect of each other, and we're going to start rewarding and encouraging these kinds of behaviors for anybody we hire. Doesn't matter who's there. We're going to live this way together. Now, here's what we know are the competencies that make up a great leader. And you get to define what those are. And then what you can do is you can just evaluate your team and you give them a red, yellow, green. And here's how red, yellow, green works. Red is they're not performing in their current role. And this, by the way, is just a general rule of any kind. Anytime you're assessing your team, the red, yellow, green exercise can be defined as this. They're a red if they're not performing in their current role. They're a yellow if they're performing well in their current role. The only way they get a green is if the organization doubled and their job was much bigger and more complex. You believe they would perform, that's a green. Anyone who's red, you shouldn't have in your company. Anybody who's yellow, you need to start having conversations with, and don't assume that they're going to make it to that next level, and make sure they know that they may or may not make it to the next level, because yellow is just a wake-up call. And then anybody who's green, make sure you invest in them and ensure you do not lose them. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a helpful way to start to identify and map. We can have a longer conversation about succession planning another time, but initially I want you to just start thinking about, how am I going to depersonalize my company so that it's not based on niche? And I think you've done some of that for sure, but there are just some other tools that might help you do that, but I want you to review.
Okay.
And then next week when you come back, just let me know what you thought. You know, if you watch it, you're like, I'm not sure how that works, or where would I do that, or why would I do that? Just ask me and we'll work through it.
Okay. And may I ask, on the email that you sent me recently, module 3, video 7 and 8, what are those? And is that related, or is that a different topic?
I'm assuming that is how to have performance conversations. I can't remember what. Let me look it up right now. Was that on another call that we had like a while ago, or I can't remember?
It was just a month ago, and you said, you know, you should, right, you should review these, and I really don't remember what the topic was.
I'm signing in right now to the program. You would my credibility is dropping fast that I don't know my videos or modules, but that's all right.
Remember what I had for breakfast, so then.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's go to module. I'm sure there's a great reason I told you to do that, and I'm excited to learn what that great reason was. All right. What videos did I tell you?
Module 3, video 7 and 8.
7 and 8. Oh, yeah. That's all about performance management. So Okay. For sure watch that, because that's related to this guy, how you get performance out of it. And you know what? You might consider investing in leadership training for him. You know, at some point, put him in this program and just get him learning how to have these conversations, listen to other leaders, see how things work, hear about things like I just, you know, gave a little lecture on boundaries, right? So, and Michelle modeled boundaries. And honestly, that's one of the things that can help young leaders, is when they see other really good leaders or who have traits that they need to learn to emulate. I can kind of say, hey, you need to be more like Michelle. Did you see what she just did? And that gives them a little bit of like, oh yeah, okay, that's a way of being in the world that can be effective and successful.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Something to consider if you're really committed to him and he's awesome at all these other levels and he's the guy you want. That stuff can be trained and coached. You just may not be as skilled at coaching it, or you may not have the time or whatever, but your job, no matter what, is to set the expectation, and then you will resource him, whether you're personally coaching him or whether you hire a coach or whether you involve him in a training or whatever. Your job is your only job is to define the thing and then resource him.
Got it. That makes sense.
Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody want to go a second round? Susan, anything else you want to talk about? Anything on your mind?
You're on mute.
You're muted.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm picking up great tidbits as we go through things. I want Brandy to know I am walking in your shoes, just letting you know.
I appreciate hearing that. Thank you. And I might have someone to work for you in the future, so.
Hey, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Good. Anybody else? We got some time. Or we can close early if you guys want. We don't have to use the whole time.
Well, let's talk a little more about leadership competencies.
Okay. So, I find that leadership competencies are most useful after you have defined company values and vision. So when you have kind of mission, vision, values, strategy, structure. It's that, that's the sequence. So when you're designing an organization and you're wanting it to function the right way, the vision is first, which is kind of the why you exist.
Yeah.
Mission is kind of more business mission. Like, what are you achieving? Goals are more business related versus like the why. So vision, mission, goals. Then you have strategy. What's the strategy that will support all these things above? And then you have structure. And structure is, what is the staffing configuration that will support that strategy? So that's the sequence by which you design organizations. When it comes to leadership competencies, what you're trying to do is match the values, the vision, all that stuff. You're trying to elucidate, what do we require in a leader? So, and you don't want to be overly exhaustive, but you do want to know, like, there are a couple of key traits that we know we need. We need, you know, the ability to link what you do on the ground to the mission. That's a leadership competency. I know how what you do on the front line impacts what we do over here. Another leadership competency might be executive presence. You have the ability to maintain a non-anxious presence in the midst of an anxious situation. That's a leadership competency. Another one is the ability to have respectful, honest conversations. So lots of people are super respectful, but they end up being really indirect. Lots of people have honest conversations, but they're not very respectful. Our leadership competency is respectful, honest conversations. Mitch, you should be writing all these down, by the way, because these are the things you're going to have.
Right.
Do. I'm just messing with you.
Thank you.
You know, and
thank by you for the way, calling me out.
Yeah. I'm just messing with you. So I'm just giving you my generic leadership competencies that I think all great leaders need to have. A commitment to higher levels of self-awareness. That's a classic leadership competency. So if we know that the tools of a leader are language and conversation, then, you know, you'd want to have competencies around how to have conversations. And what I know about leaders who understand, who are outperforming those that don't, are high levels of self-awareness. Another leadership competency would be the ability to own mistakes in front of people.
Yeah, vulnerability. So
a really interesting feature of leaders is they have a tendency to feel like, because I'm in the position of power, I must have done it right. And if I admit that I didn't do it right, I'll lose credibility. In my experience, the opposite is true. The best leaders I know are actually apologizing on a regular basis, like owning the mistakes they made. So like low level of defensiveness, high level of self-awareness, and a high level of owning mistakes is one of the most powerful things you can do as a leader. So those are just like a small handful of leader. Is that why am I answering your question, Susan, or yeah, do you want to yeah, go a different direction? And I mean, I don't think what I'm saying is like terribly revolutionary for any of you. I think as you hear that, you're just like, duh, yeah, that's obvious. But sometimes it's just good to note it and to have it in writing and to be like, here are the things that we expect of you. Mitch, what's the key leadership competency of Frank that you think is currently missing? How would you define that? Is it any of the ones I listed, or is it completely unrelated? It might be something else.
I think what it is with Frank is, and I'm not sure I'm going to put it in the right words, but he has all the skill sets. Mm-hmm. He just he needs. I'm going to say it wrong. He needs to be more of a leader. He needs to take charge, right? Needs to go, this is the way it needs to happen. And with all respect and everything.
What does he do instead?
He's very non-confrontational. Whether it's with me or whether it's with a client, he's like, okay. Right. He does a good job at what he does, as he's going up to higher and higher levels within the organization and the industry, right? He needs to be perceived of, let me tell you what needs to happen, right? He needs to take charge and go, this is what I need to happen. And he's right now, he's very passive, and I need him to be proactive, right? I need him to be proactive.
Okay, so the way I might say that then is a key leadership competency is the ability to have a clear point of view and express it while at the same time remaining open to feedback and input. Some people soliciting feedback and input, and that's useful, but too much of it. And people are like, why are you in the role of a leader? And other people are entirely too bull in a china shop. I've already got all the answers and I don't want to listen to any of you. And then people are like, you're just flying blind now. And so that's a polarity of leadership and a key competency. Do you have the capacity to issue a clear, courageous point of view and be wrong? That's also a part of leadership, is often being wrong.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, that's actually helpful.
So framing that phrase that I just said, you can take that phrase and give that to him as, hey, one of my key leadership competencies in this organization is, and then go back to this recording if you didn't take the notes, and it's somewhere near the end of the call, an hour into the call.
Right. Yeah, I did write that down. It's quite helpful.
Good. Another helpful resource for you, Mitch, the book that I just wrote called The Seven Management Polarities. At the heart of that is, and a great place to start is, you can just send them like the quiz, the link to the quiz. If you go to my website and you look up books, Seven Management Polarities, I could probably find it and put it in the chat here. You send him this quiz and he basically assesses himself on all the seven major polarities of management. So like, are you more directive or are you more collaborative? And if he ends up being way over here on the collaborative side of things, you simply point to that as one of the leadership competencies. And you say, hey, you should be closer to this. I want us to work on getting you over here. So it's just a nice way to kind of self-assess. Let me drop that in the chat right now.
Yeah, what is your website, Shane?
ShaneHips.com. I know it's hard to figure out, but I'm going to drop it in the chat. Anybody can click on this. Wait a minute. It's not one of my links. This is a secret hidden link. You can't navigate here on my website yet. Enjoy this quiz, everybody. And actually, any of you can take it. And I'm just so kind of candidly busy right now. I'm having a hard time staying on top of all the logistics. I would love to get you all a copy of that book. I'm not in a spot where I can do that right now. But take that quiz. And it'll map where you are on the management polarities, the seven most common polarities. If you don't know what polarities are, make sure you watch module 5, where I talk about the difference between problems and polarities. This is a critical distinction if you don't already know it. And then take that quiz, and then you can use that quiz to guide you to a chapter in the book to read, both if you are out of balance in that polarity, how to begin to correct that. And if you work for or lead someone who's out of balance in that polarity, I give you recommendations and suggestions for how to have that conversation, how to guide them, how to think about it. So it's both managing yourself and managing others, whether you're up or down, below, it doesn't matter. And it's just, again, it's just another way to pinpoint and map this really amorphous world of management. You might.
Shane, how do we get that? I just want to make sure.
If you go into the chat, I just dropped the link. It says ShaneHips.com. Did you get that?
No, I'm not sure how to do. Sorry.
You go down to the bottom, Mitch. There's a little chat bubble on the bottom of your Zoom screen. Just click on that, and it'll bring up the sidebar. Is everyone else seeing it?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, I got it.
So click on that, and you can take that quiz, and you can also send it to them. It's 5 minutes. It's free. It's no big deal. And you'll basically just get like a map. And then I did not build this, because that's the reason it's not public, because I didn't build it in a way that it's useful for somebody unless they have the book. So I apologize for not having all the resources in the right spot. But you can get the book on Amazon. It'll be delivered. You can get an ebook. It's easy. It's not too expensive. So that could be really useful for you also, especially as you're designing leadership competencies. All of you could literally take that book and just each chapter elucidates one of the key polarities that has to be in balance as a leader. So are you more of a doer or a delegator? Are you more of a, you know, a visionary, or are you more practical? Are you, and all of these things are necessary, but sometimes we are out of balance. And being out of balance in some cases is necessary and important. The goal is not to be in the middle all the time. For example, if you're really high up in an organization, being a doer is a mistake. You should be really far over on the delegating side of things. Whereas if you're mid-level manager or below, you know, you're going to need to be more balanced on the doing and delegating. Comments or questions? Anybody else have more you want to talk about? I'm available, but we can also hop off if you guys need to. I'll give you a few minutes. I'm okay with uncomfortable silence.
I think everybody's doing the quiz.
Oh, you're all doing the quiz. Yeah, we can wait if you want to do the quiz. That's fine.
I think it's fun if you guess what you are and then take the quiz. And then it's like, whoa, reality.
Or sometimes it's just reflects back what you already knew about yourself.
I feel this, and I've been trying to figure out the ant, what is it called, anagram? Yeah, I read them all. I'm like, okay, I see that. I see that. Well, darn. So
Are you feeling like you found your type yet or no?
No.
Last week,
because I can see a little of myself in almost every single one of them.
Okay, that would be normal. What that means. That's part of the Enneagram lore, and that's really normal. So the thing that's key about the Enneagram, what makes the Enneagram different from all the other personality systems, is that everything else is about preference and behavior. I like this and I do this and I don't do that and I don't like that. The Enneagram looks like it's about preference and behavior, but it's actually not. It's actually there to help you understand why you prefer and behave the way you do. And it's usually getting at our shadow, which is why it's very exposing, but also the most powerful tool you can use. So
I think my primary, though, is, what is it, the challenger? Yes. I know you in the modules you use different, but I think that's my primary.
Yes, I believe you're right. That's been my assessment of you from the beginning. And I think you should keep exploring it and keep exploring what it feels like. Because look, a 3 and a 7 and a 6 can all look like an 8, which is the challenger. They can behave in that way. But what makes a challenger is not just their behavior. It's what is it that drives you? What is it that really truly is that core fear and the thing that you feel that you want? And the 8 is really driven by kind of a fundamental belief that the world is broken and it needs to be fixed. And I'm probably one of the few people who can fix it. And so they carry a heavy burden and they're not entirely wrong. And so if that resonates for you a lot, whereas I don't necessarily feel like the world is broken. I'm much more affected. I'm a 3, right? So I'm way more affected by like, how am I coming across? What do people think of me? And boy, I've got a lot to get done in a short period of time. And I'm really irritated by inefficiency and I can kind of morph into different things really easily. Whereas 8s, they can't morph. They are who they are. And you put them in any situation, they're the same color. They have a hard time morphing. Whereas a 3, you put me in a room that's green, I turn green and don't even notice I turn green. I'm just like, what? I'm green. I'm always green. Of course I'm green. And they're like, no, we're just in a blue room. You were blue. I'm like, no, I'm blue, green. What's the difference? And 8s.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I saw too, like for myself, because I can, when I'm not, I guess, in a driven mode, because when I'm in a driven mode, I am very much my challenger. But yeah, when I'm in exploring, yeah, I can give me your feedback. I can kind of morph and move and be fluid. But yeah.
The other thing I would say is it's not uncommon for an 8 to have been given the feedback over the course of their lifetime that that surprises them. Like 8s are often very surprised at how people experience them. And that means like, what? All I said was, let's do this. And suddenly that person's offended. I don't know why they're offended. That's a really common experience. I remember this one time I was coaching an 8 and a, I don't know, a 6 or a 3, who knows what the other type was. It might've been a 2, but anyway, I talked to the 8. I'm like, hey, I understand you had a kind of a hard conversation with somebody. And they're like, no, I just told them what I thought and we worked it out. And that was that. I go to the other person and they're like, I don't ever want to speak to that person again. They said this and this and this. And I'm like, I go back to the other person. I'm like, hey man, you may not know this, but you got a giant horn on the front of your head and that was a bunny. So I know you got thick skin. So like a rhinoceros doesn't notice that like it just stepped on a glass, let alone that it broke it. You know, it's just a big, thick skinned, powerful animal. And if you're a kitten, you can get gored pretty easily and you're going to get it. So 8s are just pretty tough, but they're also protecting a soft, gooey center. So 8s are actually very, very loving and warm and deeply loyal and value loyalty, but they come off as having quite a thick exoskeleton, but it's really just protecting a beautiful, soft, gooey core.
Hence my life motto.
Yes.
Dogs welcome, people tolerated. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly right.
Just no matter what, no matter what. Yeah. I don't have to, you know, they're happy to see me even if I just walked out the door 2 seconds ago.
Yeah. The other thing 8s generally fear a lot is rejection. And so dogs never reject, you know, they always accept. And so 8s are often in the business of pre-rejecting, you know, just in case I'm going to take you out first. I'm out of here before no way. Because they don't want to deal with that. And so that's the funny, kind of the interesting thing about 8s is most people see them as pretty, pretty scary, big, powerful, sometimes dominant, domineering personalities. I just adore them. I think they're incredibly warm. And when you know that about them and you can read through their intensity, you will get this kind of devotion to relationship. So anyway.
So I can tell you, I've spent thousands of dollars and you've explained me in like 2 sessions. That's all I'm saying. My coach that I still meet with every week, just, you know.
Yes.
Anyways.
that happens. Keep going with the Enneagram and stay focused on the 8. Keep learning about it. It's gonna reveal a lot of things to you that are going to be super helpful. And by the way, the coaching that I've given you to date has been right out of the manual, the handbook of how to coach an 8. The moment I started talking, I'm like, oh, that's probably an 8. And I've just been giving you suggestions along the way that I give generically to 8s. And I don't mean that it's not personal to you. I just mean it's a great shortcut to help people get to the things that they need. So like everything we're talking about high bandwidth, that's 8. Everything we talk about intense exercise, that's an 8.
I find myself even practicing when I have conversations with you. I mean, I'm like, I know I do not handle every situation correctly. If I ever offend you, please come and talk to me because I promise you it wasn't the way it wasn't the way I meant it.
That is a lot of the feedback that I give 8s. I will tell 8s to reveal yourself to the people you talk to so that they're prepped and literally do exactly what you just said. Hey, I'm a big personality with a lot of intensity, and I don't ever want you to get the impression that I'm not super open to your direct feedback. And sometimes I'll come off so strong that you might not want to give me that feedback. I just want you to know I crave it and I welcome mm-hmm. it. And that's a great precursor to any relationship and any conversation you're going to have if you're an 8. And Brandy, it is possible that you're somewhere in this territory. I don't know that for a fact, but I think you might be feeling like we're talking behind your back. Are you feeling that way or no?
Oh, I was going to tell Michelle at the beginning. I'm like, girl, I'm an 8. Don't worry. I'm right there with you.
That's why
I'm giggling over here. I'm just like, yep, I'm an 8.
Mitch is a 3. I think JD may be on the 3 bandwagon with me and Mitch. I don't know. And Susan, we haven't spent enough time to know. You might look at the 2. Susan, have you looked at the Enneagram bonus training?
No, I can't wait to do that, though.
Okay, yeah, take a look at it because you might find quite a lot useful. And I do wonder for you, maybe the 3, maybe the 2, maybe the 1, but I'll let you play with it and then we can get back on and we can talk about it. JD, are you still there?
Yes.
Have you taken a look at that at all?
Yes, I also subscribe to the Topology podcast by Ian.
And oh, yeah.
I've listened to that before and heard through that way. And before coming into this, thought of the three, and also went through yours as well. So,
okay, cool. And so you're feeling you resonate with the three?
Yes.
Yeah, that's my read of you also. So, I mean, the good news is best type on the Enneagram. So, I mean, some of the eights will dispute that, but they're not right. Awesome.
I don't dispute it. I own it.
Right there with you, Brent.
Good. What else? We got another 20 minutes if you want to use it. If you don't, we don't have to.
Are you trying to get rid of us?
I'm never trying to get rid of you. I'm here. I block my time. I'm available. It's really up to you.
Exactly. All. Me too.
Yeah. If you want to use it. If you don't, it's okay. You just want me to, like I said, I can lecture about anything.
Can I ask Susan where her equine therapy is at? What state?
Florida.
Oh, that's on the other side of the country. Never mind.
I know, but it's nice over here.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Sometimes. We're at in Florida. We're at in Florida.
Loxahatchee, Florida.
Okay.
Which is about 10 miles due west of West Palm Beach.
Yes. I'm a born and raised Floridian, so I know exactly where you are. And actually live in Florida right now. But in Lakeland.
Ah, okay. So I have kids my kids are in Tampa, two of them.
Okay.
So
small
world. Beautiful here. It's actually cold. And you can all laugh when I tell you it was 60 degrees here this morning, which is cold by Floridian standards. Probably
I'm a Phoenician. I'm a Phoenician. That is frigid. But I was also raised in Minneapolis where I experienced 80 below wind chill once.
Yeah.
It was lunar. It was unreal. Anyway.
I don't know how people do that.
Yeah, my friends want me to come visit Minneapolis at Christmas. And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen. Thanks. Yeah, no. I'm from California.
You're a smart person. That's why that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm in Syracuse for the next, well, 2 weeks. And they're talking some snow this weekend. I'm like, really? I'm going to go back to Florida.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Because all of us are probably doing this at some point. And when you are looking to attract new talent to your organizations, where are you looking? Where are you sending out your opportunities?
So I'll be honest, I am not a recruitment expert. That's the one thing I am not. So like how you source those kinds of things, I know all the same tools everybody else knows. I think personally, I believe in networks, or like your personal network is the best place to get the best talent that you can trust and rely on. So I don't kind of subscribe to the magic bullet. Where I do have expertise is in selection, executive selection or selection of people. And so things like the Enneagram, I highly recommend people use, or things like, there's a lot of different tools out there, but if you have a specific candidate, I can make suggestions for what you would take them through, but I'm probably not as useful at helping you find where to go. Good question.
But you would actually have people take Enneagram tests before you hire them?
I have. It depends on what level you're talking about. So like almost always at a more senior level, I will absolutely have somebody take an Enneagram test. I have them take the 5 leadership languages quiz. That's also on my website, shanehips.com. And then I would have them take the 7 management polarities also. You know, like those three things can triangulate quite a lot about a person and give you a sense for who's coming in. And again, I don't use any of these things as a criterion for exclusion. I just use them to help us anticipate what kinds of things you're going to deal with. Because in the Enneagram land, the best Enneagram type is an integrated high-functioning type. Doesn't matter which type. And the worst type you can hire is a low-functioning disintegrated type. And it doesn't matter which type it is, because the pathology at a low level of functioning is disruptive in any type structure. And the pathology, there is very little pathology at the higher levels of functioning. So you're really looking there at developmental question. How integrated and developed are they? How self-aware are they? How do they talk about their previous boss? How do they, you know, it's like dating, I guess, you know, like how do you talk about your ex? That'll tell you whether you're going to be a good person. And how do you exit those things? And, you know, so some of those are just basic intuition. But what I can do when I do like an Enneagram quiz or five leadership languages, you know, I help leaders and CEOs understand like, hey, if you hire this person, this is what you need to be prepared for. This is what you're going to need to focus on. This is the, you know, what you're signing up for. Whereas if you hire this person, you're signing up for this instead. And that'll help you kind of go, yeah, gosh, I can't be bothered with that. I really would rather deal with this. And, you know, that's legit too.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
You inspired me early on in the conversation. I'm looking forward to making my presentation and saying, look, you know, here you go.
They're going to thank you for it. At the end of the day, I'm convinced of it. They're going to be like, oh, this is great. It's the thing that I recommend with boards in general. Whether you're a nonprofit or for-profit, taking active leadership and direction of a board until they take it from you is the right way to go. You know, let them snatch the reins. Very few of them actually do.
Yeah.
Now, unless it's a hostile situation, but most of the time they're just like, there's reasonable goodwill. They're just glad you're doing the work.
Yeah. No, that'll be great.
And the other thing I suggest about boards is pre-socialize with key stakeholders before each board meeting.
Done that.
Yeah. Just get them on board. And then when they show up, they feel like they know everything already and they're already on board and it's done. And often you don't have to do it with all board members. You know, like in my case, I remember there was four different boards that I reported to. And in one of them, there was only one person I needed to pre-socialize with. If I got him on board, everybody just did what he said. And so, so that's helpful. Yeah.
This is very true.
Well, you guys were easy this week. Normally, you know, you're really difficult people, but this week you were easy. Pleasure as always.
Okay. Sounds like Brandy's going on vacation, so she's not going to have anything for the next 45 days. Everybody's going to be on holiday with the vacations coming.
No, that's right. Well, if anybody needs to leave, feel free to hop off. And we can close out and then we'll talk next week. Does that sound good to everybody? Anybody have any last questions or comments?
No, thank you.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you later. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.